Good morning. Happy 2026. Thanks, David, for reminding me. I don't know if that means you'll get a wiser message today now that I'm a senior citizen. Sorry? Yeah, they did remind me that I'm now eligible. Seniors discounts, because I need them on my haircuts. Yeah. So no guarantees. One of the things I know as I have got older is that for me the world has become a lot greyer and a lot less black and white. And that has, I guess, challenged a lot of the things that, you know, I think about. I don't know if you read it, but this, I've been part of this community here now for 46 years, which is a long time, right? On staff at Kingsway for 30 years, like crazy. Where's that time gone? And here I am, yes, turned the big 6-0 this week. I don't feel that old, but 60 sounds it. When I was your age, 60 was like ancient. As most of you know, since 2009, so about the last 17 years, I have been in and out of Cambodia a lot. I've been working there, volunteering there, running soccer trips. We started a church, Kingsway Cambodia, there in 2000, so 11 years ago, 2000 and whatever that was, 15, I think. I don't know how many times, I had to get a new passport last year because I ran out of pages. Because of all the Cambodia visas back then were like one page each. And so it just kind of added up over the years. And there's a lot of things that I have learnt and unlearnt and relearnt about my time in Cambodia over the last 16 or 17 years. A lot of difference is in the way that Cambodian culture does things compared to the way Australian culture does things. And I guess in similarly to the whole kind of Southeast Asian kind of vibe. A couple of those differences. One is around the power of connection, community, meals. If you go to Cambodia and you go to the parks at night, it's just full of people gathering together to eat together. Very big on that social connection. And interestingly, in a corporate context, trust in Cambodian culture is built around hanging out together. Whereas Australian culture, we tend to build trust more by doing stuff together, like working on a project and, you know, task-orientated. Whereas Cambodian culture very much builds trust around social or being together, hanging out. And you find that when you're in Cambodia, you get invited to a lot of stuff all the time. Now, part of it is because, yes, I'm a foreigner, and so there's, oh, yeah, we want to invite the white guy along. And I have, you know, had that experience. There is a privilege that I carry in Cambodia that I'm very aware of and try to, you know, manage that the best as I can. But generally, the culture is very invitational. They're always like inviting you out for coffee or inviting you to the little Khmer restaurant with the plastic stools on the side of the road. Or, you know, I've been invited to kids' birthday parties of families I've only just met. I've been invited to weddings of people I don't even know. Just because I know one of their friends or uncle's brother's cousin's friend-in-law, I get invited to, you know, their wedding. So I get just this very big invitational kind of culture about them. And it's great, but it's different, right? It's very different to what we're used to in our culture. I feel that Australian culture is not as invitational, to put it nicely. You know, they're very inclusive, they're very, yeah, come along, come and have a meal, come out for coffee. They want to build that connection, that relationship, and that trust. The other thing about Khmer culture, Cambodian culture, is it's very status-oriented. Now, I don't know if you noticed this, particularly in the cities, it's incredible that, you know, it's still a developing country with a pretty horrific past. You see more prestige cars in Phnom Penh that you do in Sydney. So there's this status orientation around, you know, job titles are really important. I mean, it's quite not unusual to walk into a meeting or go, if I'm delivering some workshops or training, particularly in the corporate space, the first thing that happens, I'll get a business card from every person in the room. You know, they want to make sure that I know of their status, their title, you know, what they do, how important they are, if you like. So there's this kind of status orientation around, you know, who you sit next to and, you know, who gets invited and who's allowed in and all that kind of that vibe. So these kind of two significant differences I find in Cambodia, to me, connect very much with the story that we're looking at today from Luke chapter 14, which is where Jesus tells a story about the big banquet, if you like. Now, you got in this context, I see the culture that Jesus was in at the time is more similar to Cambodian culture than it would be Australian culture. So it's very, again, very communal oriented, very invitation oriented, very, you know, Jesus, you'll see, is always telling stories. There's always Jesus eating at, you know, inviting people to banquets, to dinners, to parties, around tables, to food. There's very much this connection, communal kind of part of their culture that's really, really important. And then also, it's very status oriented. There is this sense around, you know, who gets invited and who you sit with, you know, where you're placed at the table, if you like. And so those kind of, if you think about the culture of the day that Jesus is speaking into, just think about that kind of framework, if you like, because I think this is where what Jesus brings this message to out of Luke 14. I remember probably early on in my time going to Cambodia, and I got invited to a family's place for dinners. It's just out of the city, in a village, very poor community, you know, and I get invited to their place for lunch. Now, I was speaking at the local village church. They invited me to the family get-together. So the only person that was there that wasn't family was me. And I was also the only non-Cambodian. So none of them spoke English apart from a couple. But this sense of you're welcome, you're invited, come along, you belong here, you're part of us, is very much their culture. It's very much around who they are. For me, I love that idea. So if we jump into Luke 14 and this story that Jesus tells. Now, interestingly, Jesus is actually at a banquet. He's actually at somebody's house, a prominent Pharisee leader of the time. He's been invited to dine with them, so he's having lunch or dinner. He's at a banquet, a dinner party, whatever it is, and he's noticing what's going on. He's watching people come in, and it says in the early part of Luke 14, he's where they sit and who they sit with, and this kind of whole status orientation. And he's also being watched. You know, the first thing he does is heal someone on the Sabbath. And it kind of like they slip that one under the table, and he just kind of like keeps going with his observation and communication. And they're listening, he's being watched, but he's also observing what's going on with these people as they arrive at this dinner, this banquet, this around the table moment. And he comments on it. He makes a couple of observations around, particularly around status. He's at this meal, and as I said, he does these two kind of things that I believe are really connected to the heart and posture of the kingdom. And in a sense, are really, for me, reflective of Jesus' life and his ministry and what he was about in the context of his time on the planet. The first thing he does is he speaks, as I said, into this kind of status vibe, what he observes is going on. And he doesn't necessarily attack it or, you know, say it's bad or wrong, but he brings a different perspective, if you like. He reframes it. He gives a different perspective around honor and humility. He gives the kingdom I guess, perspective about what's important. He doesn't say status is bad. He just explains that humility is better. Better for others and better for us. You know, we don't just walk into rooms, do we? We look around. We observe. We scan the room. Who's important? Where should I sit? How do I look? Where do I fit? How do I fit? Do I fit? Where should I sit? You know, I think this is a universal challenge, is this whole economy of comparison. Jesus is observing this in his context. People quietly thinking, am I seen? Am I important? Do I matter? And that's not just Jesus' culture of the day. That's today too, right? We're still asking those same questions. Am I important? Am I seen? Do I matter? It's everywhere. It's here. It's today. It's in social media. It's in church. It's in families. It's in leadership. It's in relationships. And he reframes, I guess, this status vibe. And he says this. He says, don't take the best seat. Take the lowest. Not as fake humility, but because the kingdom of God runs on a different currency. Not image, not achievement, not proximity to power. Pride thrives on an audience, whereas humility thrives on relationship. And to me, relationship and inclusion in the kingdom are key messages and themes and at the heart of this story that Jesus is talking about. And then the second thing he does, which was the part of the scripture that Dave asked me to speak on, was he tells a story or a parable of sorts about this guy who is preparing a great banquet. And the story in brief is this. The host sends out invitations to a great banquet. Now, in those days, people generally would send out two invitations. The first one, and we do this sometimes today, is the save the date invitation, right? I've got a banquet coming up, save the date, you're invited. And then the second invitation is, it's ready, come. Okay, so the understanding is the people already know it's on and they're going to come. And so, because they've given the save the date invitation, and now they're giving the, it's ready, come along, everything is ready, it's time to come. And then something possibly surprising happens. And for the host, I reckon this would be pretty frustrating. It's people don't come. We're not great at RSVPing all the time, are we? But I don't know what, if you did a party, if you were hosting a banquet and you sent out all these invitations with an expectation that these people were going to come, and then come, you know, you send the invitation out in the morning, yep, everything's ready, banquet's prepared, food's on the table, come along and no one turns up. How would you be feeling? A little bit frustrated. The people who were invited don't come. And they make up all these excuses. You read them in the text. It's not because they hate him or they're angry, but it's because they're busy or have other priorities and stuff going on. You know, one's bought a field and one's bought some oxen and one got married. None of those things are necessarily bad. They're just, well, distracting. Or in this case, good excuses. Like, it's not my fault I can't be there. I've got stuff on. I've got things I need to do. There's things in my world that are more important than going to your place for lunch. And I think this is one of the challenges in our spiritual journey. It's not rebellion so much. It's this preoccupation, distraction, busyness, priorities. Life gets loud. Responsibilities pile up, expectations grow, and suddenly God's invitation becomes the background noise. And I know I've been in that world many times, doing really good things, but quietly losing myself in those things, you know, leading, building, producing, serving, ministering, and missing the invitation to the table. We don't necessarily walk away from God, we just get too tired, too busy, too distracted to sit with Him. So what does the host in this story do? He doesn't cancel the banquet. He doesn't, you know, do the self, feel sorry for myself and eat all the food. And he opens the doors wider. So he says, go into the streets, go into the alleyways, go into the dusty lanes and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, the lame. In other words, bring the people who never thought they were invited in the first place. Invite them, bring them, compel them to come to lunch. And that's the heart of God. Religion says, fix yourself, then come. Grace says, come and I will heal and restore what's broken. The kingdom says, you already belong. You're already invited. There's already a seat for you at the table. You know, I've watched young men who were told they had no future become amazing leaders. I've seen girls who were trafficked become strong, courageous, and give back to their communities so powerfully. People who thought they had no value discover that they were always wanted, always valued, and full of purpose. They had a seat at the table. People who thought they weren't invited or didn't belong, or there wasn't room for people like them. God's table fills the fastest with people who are hungry. Even if they're not sure what it is that they want, even if they're not entirely understand what that hunger is about. Those who know they need grace, even if they don't feel like they deserve it. You know, this series, summer series, for me starts here, for all of us. Before we talk about following Jesus or about rest, about being formed and about mission, we start here that you are invited. Not to a religion or a program or a performance, but to a relationship, a table, a banquet, a life with Jesus. To follow, to rest, to be formed, to partner with, they all begin the same way. Come and sit with me. Come and be at my table. Because God has already said yes. And yet, so often, we wrestle with our own excuses or challenges or doubts. Am I good enough? Do I have it all together? Is now the right time? Some of us are tired already. It's only whatever it is in January. Some of us are disappointed. Some are grieving. Some are quietly drifting. Some of us are distracted, questioning faith, followership. Some of us have doubt, and Jesus says, there's a seat for you. Not next year, not when you fix yourself. Not when you figure it all out, but now. There's a place at the table. Jesus is inviting us. He's not standing over you with a clipboard, ready to measure you. He wants to meet you, meet with you, and be with you, standing at the door saying, everything is ready and you're invited. Because in the kingdom, everyone is invited, but but not everyone is willing. Jesus invites us into a better kingdom. It is a place where we do not have to compete, perform, or prove. Only receive and belong. But it does require a response from us. An action, a step in. Your resume doesn't matter. Your hunger does. So as we step into 2026 and those well-intentioned resolutions to work harder, try harder, be better, perform higher, all good, but just come closer. Come to the table, come to grace. Come to be with him because you're invited into a different way of living. You're invited into a kingdom way of living. And it says you belong, you matter, you're valued, and what you bring is important to this table. Let me pray. Lord, as we start this year, as we think about the invitational nature of the kingdom of you, our God, as you invite us in, as you invite us to a table where you sit, to be with you, to be encouraged by you. And my prayer for all of us this morning was that we would leave encouraged. That we would leave this gathering knowing that we matter, knowing that we are seen, and knowing that we are invited into something quite spectacular. Where status doesn't matter. Because we're already valued, we already hold worth, we already belong. My prayer is that we accept that invitation every day to sit with, to walk alongside, and to be part of your kingdom, of your story that is shaping our lives and our future. Regardless of where we sit, regardless of what we think, of what we've done, of where we've been and what's ahead, my prayer is that we would know that we belong. And there's a seat for us. And that we would take that and hold that and live that out, knowing that there's also a seat for our friend, for our family, for the person we live next door to, the person we walk with, the person we work with. That there's a seat for everybody because all are invited into the kingdom.